You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Nicholas Bearley of the Billion Dollar Body. Nicholas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. I appreciate you creating a space for people to learn and grow. I didn't have this back in the day, and I'm so grateful to be able to give back and help people not go through the struggles that I went through, which is super awesome.
Yeah, I tell you, I can totally understand where you're coming from there. I certainly did it the hard way, and it sounds like you did too. There's an easier way that that we've learned and we can share here. So speaking of which,
Absolutely.
How about you?
Hey, by the way, we went to the School of Hard Knocks, right? I didn't do well in school, but the School of Hard Knocks was definitely the place that I learned.
That's it seems to never end those days, I believe. Why don't you tell us the Billion Dollar Body? How did you come up with that idea?
Yeah, great question, man. I came out of it through my struggle. Mm-hmm. I found out that we're not too unique, that we have our own struggles that no one else has. And so growing up, I had quite a few struggles in family. And I remember when my parents ended up breaking up and living in different houses, and the anxiety and the feelings that I had around that, the pressures at school with not being a kid that really felt like I fit in. I only did and try to get good grades so I could try to get money from my parents. And then when I didn't see that money come in, I was like, forget this thing altogether. And it really came down to a big transition point that I'm hoping everyone will have for themselves here, but for the positive. I remember being 13 years old and me and my dad having a big falling out. And I ended up gaining 60 pounds after that. I graduated high school with a 1.8 GPA only because I went to summer school every single year. And I hadn't had a girlfriend for 7 years. And I was failing in all these three areas that it's actually every man's obligation to prosper. And I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Yet this was like a very scary point in my life. And the very first thing that I focused on, I had a transformation inside of my health. And if I didn't have that transformation, one, I would have nothing to teach people. I really, truly believe that the three core places to teach is, one, you have to learn first. The second thing you have to do is apply. And the third thing you want to do is then teach it to other people, because that's the only place where you can continually have growth after you do that. The only area of my life at that point was in my health. It was only the only ethical thing that I could actually teach at the time was losing weight, which now we create three-dimensional businessmen that legitimately prosper in health, wealth, and relationships. But I hadn't done that yet. I didn't want to be one of those gurus that acted like I did. So coaching over 600 men one-on-one, I helped them just legitimately lose body fat and feel confident again the way that I did. And I helped the men lose over 15,000 pounds. And since then, have transitioned into helping them create a business after creating seven figures online and offline as well. And also being married for 5 years and helping them live a life where they can actually have it all. Because I noticed that health wasn't always the biggest problem. I'm sure you've seen this before. If your relationship's not doing well or your business isn't doing well, it could affect your health. And I was just helping with one symptom rather than getting down to the core root problem, which is what we do today.
Sure, sure. That's completely fair. So when you're 13 years old, you gained, you say 60 pounds, like 6'0"?
Yeah, 6'0". It was pretty bad.
Okay, when you're 13 years old, you probably don't even weigh a 120 to start. So you're adding 33% of some love handles there.
Yeah, definitely. Men definitely gain most of their weight in their stomach. The front, back, sides are all three. And that was something I definitely had myself as well. And it caused a lot of pressures. It caused a lot of self-consciousness, which just means I'm only conscious of myself and I can't serve other people, to the point where I got made fun of at school. And I'm sure people have gone through this in some area of their life. He said, "Whoa, you're looking a little nipply here today, Nicholas." Like I was really struggling with my frame.
Sure.
And I just felt, man, I didn't know what to say to that guy. And so what I do, I went out and I covered it up with a sweatshirt. And I wore that sweatshirt every single day, even in the middle of the summer, 110 degrees for an entire year. It, to the point where it was faded around the hood because the fabric had actually changed colors for me wearing it every day. And I just decided to change my life through covering up my insecurities.
Sure.
Rather than knowing that they could be changed.
So what was the turning point?
It's a very good question. So I believe there's two different types of people out there. So figure out where you're at. It's okay no matter where you're at because it can be changed. There's the people that are motivated. They're excited. They've always been a motivated person, but they truly just don't know what to do to change. Then there's the other type of person that knows everything what to do. These are the people that are the smartest health people, wealth people, doesn't matter who they are, but they actually just can't do it for themselves. They can't find the motivation to do it. At the time, I was in that first category. I didn't really understand like what to do differently. I hadn't sat there long enough to really bask in the fact that I was 60 pounds overweight and this could change. And it wasn't until someone came to my school, and it was actually just a friend of mine. A friend of mine was at school, and I remember him pulling out a bag of fruit. And I thought, why are you pulling out a bag of fruit? I eat orange chicken every day, a huge cinnamon roll, and I drink chocolate milk during the winter and hot chocolate milk during the summer, hot chocolate during the winter. That was like my regimen. And I saw this guy pull out a bag of fruit, and I just thought that was so weird. And somehow I mustered up the courage in that moment to say, what made you bring that to school? And he said that he had a boxing coach that was actually helping him get to the correct weight and be at his highest performance that he could be for his boxing match. And all of a sudden it just hit me. Wow, if I just follow a plan, it'll help me not only lose the weight that I want, but it'll also help me become more high performance where I'll be able to have like the edge on the competition. I told you, I was already a motivated kid. I just didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I went home. I didn't get his plan. Never even gave that guy a thank you. I went home and said, Mom, I want these types of foods. I'm going to eat differently. And even with eating junk food, mini corn dogs, potato skins, every night I just limited the quantity, replace some of those things with fruit and some granola bars that I don't even actually recommend all the time now. But with that immense focus, I lost 60 pounds in 6 months. And if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have connected with my dad again. I wouldn't have gone out there and reconnected with some of my purpose. I went out there and met a friend that transformed my whole life, or met my wife that would have never spiraled me into the business I have today. So I'm so grateful, A, that I was 60 pounds overweight, which most people will not say, but it created who I am today. And I'm also grateful for the people that helped me get from A to B.
Sure. So all this happened when you were 13 years old, or was this over the course of time of a decade or something?
Yeah, great question. So this was me from when I was 13 years old, gaining weight and being overweight until I was about to graduate high school.
Okay.
So right around 17, 18 years old. And then even after that, I still had other struggles. I didn't know how to go to the gym. I lost all the weight. I remember taking off my shirt for the very first time in front of my stepmom and my dad. And I was like, this is it. Like, I made it. I lost 60 pounds. I took off my shirt and they looked at me and my stepmom, I'll never forget this. She looked at me and said, wow, you look emaciated. Like, you need to work out and lift some weights. And I thought, oh my goodness, now I lost the weight. Now I'm still a loser and I still don't know what to do. So it truly, no matter what, no matter where you're at, even if you're super fit, people still have issues. Like, they still sit there and look at themselves and say that they're not good enough and that they're not fit enough. They're not low enough body fat. They don't have enough muscle. So it truly isn't just your performance that makes you internally happy. Yet the actions that you do to fuel your body, to fuel your business, to fuel your relationship, those actions can create confidence because you know you're treating yourself with value. You're treating yourself with honor.
You know, it's interesting you say that, talking about the body image thing. Because I was going through your website, and I just talked to a buddy of mine at a fitness club that I belong to with my family, and he's doing he's over 60 years old, and he's doing it's a strongman competition thing where they have to lift a total of 1,700 pounds between squat, deadlift, and bench press. And I thought, holy cow, 1,700 pounds! He's talking about squatting over 700, and I thought, how do they even get that on the bar? But it's interesting because you think about the body type that he is. I mean, just all muscle, he's like a brick. And other people that you see, someone that's doing a marathon or something like that, two very different body types, but they measure success in different ways. So how do you respond to people? I guess, do you try to aim towards what they're looking for, or is there an ideal body image that you're going for? Or just help me with how you work with your clients in that regard.
Yeah, so when I would work with the men in their health specifically, and like I said, I've gone into really biz development for these men now. Yet when I would help them just lose the weight, I did what I had a transformation in because that's what I had mastered. Mm-hmm. So I hadn't mastered being a bodybuilding champion yet. The very first step, let's say someone were to come to me and say, Nicholas, what do I do? The first thing I would figure out is not what I think would be best for them, but I would truly figure out first, what's the outcome that you want? What's the body that you've seen that you're really attracted to? Who has the life that you want in this area? And that to me is one of the biggest things that someone can do, because if you don't know where you're going, you don't know how to track your progress or know if you're successful. And a lot of people, what they do is this three-step method, but they usually get it wrong. The three-step method is this: what do you want? So describing what do you want?
Sure.
Why do you want it? And how do you get it? Those are three core questions I ask them until they all line up. Everyone would tell me they want to be like the strongman. I want to lift 1,700 pounds in three core lifts. I would say, great. why do you want that? They're like, oh, it'd be great. It'd be so fun to be that fit. No, no, that's not going to help you lift for 3 hours a day for the next 3 years to be able to get there. So we want to make sure that we're not in delusion land with what we want, why we want it, and what we're actually going to do to get there. If I were to ask you, do you want to be a professional basketball player? Well, if you didn't have to put any work in, who wouldn't, right? Like, who wouldn't want to be able to drain threes like Steph Curry, you know? But when I say, hey, you're just going to have to put in about 15 hours a day for the next 10 years to possibly have about a 0.1% chance to make it, but I think we could do it, you would say, no thanks. Yet nobody truly gets to that point. So really figuring out, based on your current lifestyle, what would be a win for you? What's something that you would actually want? If you're running a business and have a family, all these different things, because you want to know, like, what's your why behind that? What's the time that you're willing to put in? So that when you get to an expert like myself or someone else, that they put together a plan of how you're going to get there, it all aligns so that you don't continually fail time after time. I can't tell you how often I see this, that because their goal is so big based on the effort that they're willing to put in and their why, they actually just keep giving up rather than actually being okay with putting in 40 minutes a day of working out 5 days a week. And being okay with the results that gets them. So it's this disillusion and disconnect between what, why, and how that gets people to fail.
Sure, sure. I often see a disconnect between what people want and the volume of work that they have to do to achieve that. And they're like, well, like that's why you see a bunch of people that are essentially average, if not on the lower scale of average, because there's not a lot of people that are willing to put in the work. Regardless of what it is, whether it's
one quick example of that for myself, even I put on my first live event 3 years ago. I do live events every year. That's an annual thing. Mm-hmm. Most of my live events are things that people can't really get into. They're private events, but one event a year I hold publicly. And I remember the very first time that I held my first live event, I had to go out there and sell tickets. Right. And I also had to get speakers.
Sure.
The speakers were people I looked up to. I had to invest in, I had to invest money into. Mm-hmm. And then I sold my first 10 tickets and I was freaking out because at that point I had promised everyone that there was going to be 100 people there. I promised the speakers and I promised the attendees. And I thought, if I fail right now, mm-hmm. I'm going to be embarrassed in front of the people and the speakers and no one will ever like me again. This is what's going through my head.
Sure.
And I remember sitting in a meeting with someone who had also held an event. So think of this for anyone else, like someone who's already been there before. And I said, I'm committing 15 hours a week to making this event successful. And they looked at me and they shook their head and they were like, that's just not going to work. Based on what you want and what you're trying to do, you need to put in 40 hours a week towards this event. Mm. And I left there and I just thought, oh my goodness. And I put in the 40 hours. I filled the event. And it was something that now has completely transformed our business and life and everything. Yet, if I would have put in the hours that I thought was going to make it happen,
sure.
I would have failed that event and made that a reality. So having someone who knows that work ethic that can help consult you on that, I think is very important.
Sure. That's very true. That's very true. Now, I guess going deeper into that, there's the whole activity versus action or accomplishment. So did you know what to do in regards to spending the 40 hours? What were you actually doing? Was it banging phones, shooting emails? Like, what did you do to drum up the business?
Great question. Now I help people do this. It's core five things that actually help you fill an event. You have selling the tickets, right? That's one of the hardest things that people come up with. Getting people to actually show up to the event, which depending on your ticket price can affect that. If you have a high ticket price, obviously people will show up. Yet if you have a free event or maybe a low investment, you want to make sure people have that you have a strategy to get them to show up. Then from there, how do you actually create great content and experiences to make sure that people actually have a great time and talk really highly about the event?
Mm-hmm.
And then how do you create a very high value offer at an event, since events by themselves are not profitable? And that's what most people don't see is, and they don't understand, is that events by themselves, if I sell every ticket to my live event, I actually don't make any money. I lose money if you think about the time I put in. So having something there that's very high value based, that's a no-brainer, that really helps the audience that's there go deeper in the thing that they're interested in. And then how do I repurpose that event to then create content, things of that nature? So the very first event that I had to do was the biggest weak point was selling the tickets, which for most people, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I legitimately had to make those lists and had to call the people that I truly felt would, one, get a lot of value from the event, but two, were the people that I really wanted to be there. And I sold about 81 of those tickets on the phone by myself to my very first live event.
Nice.
Now, after having my second live event, I was able to take the community that I had built, and I only sold about 8 tickets on the phone the second year, and about 125 of them came from our Facebook group or email list. So no matter what, no matter where someone's at, you can make this thing happen. Whether you have no following, it just depends the avenue that you're going to be able to take to either invest more time or invest more money. It's sure. one of those two things.
Sure.
So, both of them work very well, and we found that it's very profitable as well.
Right. Yeah, I always tell people, time, money, or effort, man. You got to stick them all in there.
Figure out which one you want to spend more of, right?
Right. Always hustling. So let me just walk us through the story of when you transformed yourself from a guy that essentially transformed yourself individually to the person that said, hey, I want to help other people do this.
Yeah, that's such a great question. I would say that my marriage, which is a common thing between me, Cole Hatter, which is a great mentor of mine, Russell Brunson is a great friend and mentor of mine. He owns ClickFunnels. It does about 150 million a year. He's a great friend of mine and mentor. And all of us have the same sort of story where it wasn't until we got married that everything actually changed, which is something that not everyone can handle, but they can take the principles behind it. And I remember being six, I lost the 60 pounds, yet I was so afraid to tell the story that my wife, who was my fiance at the time, had never even seen an overweight picture of me. I was so embarrassed by the person I was. I thought that my transformation wasn't good enough anyway. I thought, how is this going to help other people if they see that I was fat? They want to see that I was that I'm now fit. And I just had all these things in my head that were really scaring me. And it wasn't until I got married and I realized, wow, like, this is getting serious. I need to figure out how I'm going to be a provider of this household and how we're actually going to be able to create these non-negotiables. So one of my non-negotiables with my wife was that I didn't get married to then be apart from her to go make money and work.
Sure.
I thought, we're married. We probably want to be together now. So what are the ways that we could actually get there? And that's what I would create as a non-negotiable for people. That's what I did. What are the ways that we can get to the life that we want of not being apart? And we found out that working two separate jobs wasn't going to get us there. And so the first opportunity that came across our board was that I got a book called Business of the 21st Century by Robert Kiyosaki. And I read it and I got offered a network marketing opportunity in the same week. And I just thought, this is so strategic, whoever this person is, but I had no clue. So I bought that opportunity and I said, I'm going all in. And after that, I had my team actually at the time reach out to me and say, Nicholas, and I'm not involved with any network marketing anymore. So just so people know that. Yet at the time, this was a proving grounds. This was a refining grounds for me. They said, Nicholas, every successful person goes to the live events. And I thought, well, maybe not me. I'm not there yet. I've just started this thing, maybe next year or something. And luckily, I had a teammate that actually cared about me. They said, no, Nicholas, you don't understand. You're going to fail if you don't go to the events. And so that month, the very first month ever being in business, which this was network marketing, my wife and I flew out to that event. And it transformed my life forever. I was so dumb at this event, so uneducated on how to do business or anything, that I actually listened to what they said. This is something that no one else was
There's
doing.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Crazy thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So one guy, and I'll never forget it, Jason O'Toole, I believe his name was. He gets on stage and he goes, how many of you guys want to earn your free car in this company? You're going to have to produce $12,500 in sales. And I thought, ooh, that's me. And he laid out a framework, simple. Get a list of 50 people and write them down and follow up with them all throughout the month, and you'll do 12,500 sales. And it was a little bit more complex than that. Everyone else was looking at him like, oh, here's another one of those things. I've tried that before and it didn't work. I didn't know that. So I left. I actually did it, and I did $12,547 in sales and went and picked up my brand new BMW from the San Diego BMW dealership at 20 years old when my wife was 18.
Nice.
And that was our first like introductory into business. Yet a year later, our business had collapsed. We had failed. And I caught myself getting kicked out of my house and carpet cleaning every single day, full time for $1,200 a month.
Hold on. We got to call time out here, because this is Authentic Business Adventures. And if you failed in business, there's a story there more than just I failed in business. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so, and I failed many times that you'll love to poke at for sure.
That's what we do. This is all good.
This whole first year of business was really actually great. It was stressful in the way that I didn't know the habits. I felt like I was getting lazy. Yet I was profiting every single month inside of this network marketing business. And it wasn't until I decided I was going to move back to San Diego, which I was in Northern California at the time, and I was going to grow this business until I was a six-figure earner. Like I want to be able producing $1 million in revenue every single year. And I moved back to San Diego, and I'll never forget this moment, that a person I looked up to very much so reached out to my team that was in San Diego, and he said, Nicholas makes you work so hard. If you just actually transfer your whole team to us, you won't have to work hard and you'll make a lot of money. They all did it. They didn't make a dime. And I lost the majority of my income because of that. And I didn't know what to do. I had no clue how to build up. I didn't know how to do what we say now, which is create, keep, and build wealth. I didn't know how to even create it. And so I found myself making about $750 a month. And my wife had to go out there and get a job at a health institute, which just felt like it was breaking our core values. And I really fell into this really deep lull of not knowing, again, what do I really do? I was motivated. I was excited. Yet I just didn't know like what opportunity. I was stuck in that paralysis of analysis until I got kicked out of our townhome. And then applied to live in the back of a Safeway home, which was like where these kids were getting help from their bad, whatever family situation they were in, they were there. And I got denied from that from the state. And I literally couldn't move into the cheapest place in all of San Diego. I had to actually humble myself and live with my dad for 30 days with my wife.
Sure.
Which is super embarrassing.
Sure.
And then I had to humble myself and clean carpets for the next 2.5 years and live in a 400 square foot one bedroom apartment in East County, San Diego with no AC.
Sure. Well, to be fair, the real estate in San Diego, like I'm in Wisconsin here, and our huge house is probably your one bedroom apartment from a financial point of view. I got some buddies that live in San Diego and the real estate thing is insane. But I'm like, that's why we have winter. Tough, it makes the real estate cheaper here. Anyways, so this was a buddy of yours that essentially took your crew?
Yeah, I don't think he did it on purpose. I think my perception at the time was very not positive. I just thought that he was taking, again, if I was a good leader, no one would have left.
Sure.
100%. The thing of a good leader is they take 100% responsibility. And so I take 100% responsibility on that. I don't think I was showing up as that leader, obviously. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It had me clean carpets for 2.5 years, grow my dad's business. That gave me a lot of the general roots of how do you run a real organization. And my dad actually got into a really bad accident. And I was able to be the person that provided for his life and sustained the business while he was out for about 12 months.
Sure.
And so, that was one of the hardest things in my life. That was a huge piece of my life.
So your dad had the carpet cleaning business?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then so were you one of the employees or it was essentially you and him?
Yeah, so I was one of the employees. We had about three different vans going with carpet cleaning that have to do at least $500 a day for the company to be profitable.
Sure.
My dad had built this up over about 25 years with my uncle, and then he was the sole owner. And still to this day, I'm a partial owner at 5%, and obviously it'll be my company whenever I truly want to take it over. Yet that was the motivator for me. He knew that I was a business guy, that I wouldn't just go work for someone else. I was way too prideful and egotistical for all that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes, this is going to be your company. I'll give you 5% and come and work. And so I only took 25% of the commission of the jobs that I actually did while I sat there and wanted to help run the business and learn the ropes. And so my dad got into a really bad motorcycle accident about a year into that.
Okay.
While me and my wife were trying to build our own kind of side businesses on the side, trying new things and trying not to go after network marketing again, but do our own products. And I remember my dad, one day I got a call. And my dad was in the hospital and he didn't want to tell anyone, but my stepmom had called me. And apparently my dad had taken a motorcycle on just a little joyride. I grew up racing motocross and he was wheeling up the street.
Sure.
He had flip-flops on and he had swim trunks on. I think he was still like wet from the pool.
Oh, no.
And he ended up falling on the street and he tried to ride the bike back home and just take a shower and lay down in bed. And we found out that he had shattered every rib on his left side. Broke his scapula into 32 pieces, his collarbone into 16 pieces. He had broke his shoulder, tore his bicep tendon off. He had torn his rotator cuff. He had a collapsed lung, all these different things, just a lot of different things that he just had the adrenaline.
Sure.
And I just remembered at that moment that, wow, this just got real.
Sure.
My dad needs help and I need to take over this business and go out there and work really, really hard. So I had the honor of being able to do that for a year and a half, and I'm so grateful for that time. And it really launched us out into our business afterwards. Because right when my dad came back, that's when I was like, I need to go after my own thing. I need to go all in. And we've been profitable every month in our business since then, actually.
Sure. That's interesting. That's the manly way, right? Just rub some dirt on it. You'll be all good. But it's also interesting. With your dad's business there, I always introduce to my clients the hit by the bus scenario because stuff like that'll happen, right? I mean, he didn't go out on the motorcycle ride to have this happen to him. It just happened to him. And it's a good thing that you were there to pick up the pieces, so to speak.
100%. If that wouldn't have happened, I don't know what exactly would have happened. But it all worked out perfectly. And I remember this was right around the time when my wife went to her first business event again, like a really big business event. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't go to that event. And I was super sad, but I had to stay back and clean carpets and do my job. And my wife went with her mom to this event. At this event, she got pitched for a $5,000 product.
Sure.
And she calls me going, Nicholas, I really want to do this thing, and it's $5,000, and it looks really good, and I think we really need it right now, and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. I found out that she actually wanted to buy it without telling me about it. But they wouldn't let her because we were so broke that,
sure,
A, they didn't want us to even buy the product because we were too broke, and B, they knew that, how the heck are you going to buy this without telling your husband?
Right.
So I just looked at her, and I said, sounds good. Let's do it. And we raised our credit limit. We made sure we had enough debt on a card that we could actually charge this all on debt. And I always ask people, do they think that was a really good investment to do when I'm cleaning carpets, not making enough money to live, having to sell everything in my house on Craigslist to go out there and educate myself again for $5,000? And they all say, oh, yeah, that's amazing. Like, obviously, look at where you're at now, featured in Forbes for doing 7 figures and all these things.
Sure.
And I say no. In that moment, it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
But if I wouldn't have made that decision, I would still be just doing a different form of carpet cleaning, not impacting tens of thousands of men's lives,
sure,
all over the world.
Sure.
And so if it wasn't for that moment, but 6 months in, I was still scared, man. I thought, man, maybe I can ask for a refund, but I was too prideful to be one of those people that were going to like refund someone. That'd be so terrible. And if it wasn't for that one event for $5,000 for 3 days, my life would never be the same, but I wouldn't have known what I would have missed out on. And most successful people, that's one thing I will say, successful people have more fear of missed opportunity than failure.
Totally true. Yeah, I'll follow that. That's absolutely true. Yeah, because you're always looking for the next big thing. You're always looking for opportunity. You're always coming up with opportunities. And you know that you can't do it all. So you're like, oh my gosh, if I say yes to this, that means I have to say no to all this other stuff. So that's constant. Yeah, that never shuts off.
100%.
Never shuts
100%,
off.
100%,
man. And speaking of the event that you went to, this $5,000 event, was it worth it? Or was it just the process of going through figuring out that whole $5,000 thing was the education in itself?
Yeah, so both things were totally worth it. A, again, when you look back and you look at the pieces, like not everything's going to be that big, huge thing that just makes you all this money. And this is where people get tripped up. Oh, if I make this $1,000 or $20,000 investment, this better make me a bunch of money right now. I'm like, well, you went to college and you invested $120,000 or $250,000,
mm-hmm,
to hopefully make it back. And if you take the difference of the income that you make, it's going to take years, decades to make that money back.
Sure.
Yeah, all of a sudden in a business investment or something, it needs to like work right away. So I always try to make sure that I look at the bigger picture, because the majority of the investments that I've made, they usually aren't worth it in the first year. And I've made them multiple times. That investment I made over and over again for the next 3 years.
Okay.
That same event,
sure,
I continued to go to, even though I had not paid off 1 cent of my debt until year three. And that's because I knew that this was the place I needed to be if I wanted to go somewhere, not dependent on the results I'd had. So this is what I would say, is that I showed up to that event, I had the opportunity to share, and it was the first time I had truly shared my story in front of a group of people. 40 people were there, and I shared my story about being overweight, my things that me and my dad had gone through, and I broke down crying the entire time. And I had never cried in front of my wife in my entire life, and that's when I really saw two different things. One, the power of sharing your story and what it can do for your business. I had no clue that my story mattered. And after I left that event, I had 9 people want to schedule a phone call with me to hear more about our story and what we could do for them. And that was the first time that we actually booked out $22,000 in business. We had never made more than $3,000 in a month in our own business. And I booked out $22,000 from that weekend. And it was all because of me sharing that story.
No, you're talking
that 20, was the reason why.
22,000. We're not talking 22,000 carpet cleaning, right? We're talking 22,000 in, I want to talk with,
yeah,
you for coaching
the health
or
business.
Okay. Wow,
yep.
That's super cool. Super cool.
And that's when I talked to my dad. That was right around the time when my dad was coming back into the business. He could start being the CEO again. And my dad said, Nicholas, why don't you take a week off for your anniversary? And this was only May 2016, I believe, which is so hilarious that I was running a side business, carpet cleaning, all just that short of time ago. I just went past the place where I made that decision with my wife that I wasn't going to go back to carpet cleaning. We had just booked out $22,000. And my dad gave me a week off for my anniversary. We're renting a home right on the beach for that day that I was house sitting someone's dog. And I was sitting there going, what if I fail? what if this is just luck and I just never do this again? I have to come crawling back to my dad and this is going to be so embarrassing. It's going to be terrible. Yet, what if I don't make this leap right now when I have this momentum? And I called my dad and my dad said, you come back to work, son? And I said, Dad, I really feel like I need to run with this momentum. I'm going to go make this thing happen. And he totally supported me. And he said, if you ever need anything, let me know. And I just went all after it. And ever since then, we've never had a non-profitable month. I transitioned from a health company for everyone to a men's health company to now truly a men's movement, which is doing exactly what I was born to do. And we really look at our business as our ministry, our way to give back, and our way to help other businessmen create the reality that I was able to create.
Sure, sure. That's super cool. So looking at the timeline, well, I guess I got a couple things to mention about that. One, it looks like, or I guess thinking about it, I relate your story to my story, because when I went off on my business on my own, I was leaving a job that was just any other job, right? I didn't feel like there was a whole lot of risk. And it sounds like you were in a similar position, that the risk that you're risking is just the carpet cleaning gig. And though it's with your dad and stuff like that, it's not like there's not another carpet cleaning gig that you could find. So you weren't risking some monumental thing there. So that's super cool. That probably helped. And it sounds like you had the support of your dad, which is huge, I imagine. If he would have said, come on, son, you're crazy to do this on your own and you need to clean carpets if you want to fulfill your dreams or whatever, I think that probably helped.
I wouldn't have listened anyway, man. To be honest, it sounds like I have all this support and all these things, yet I would have never gone back.
Sure.
Because I would have been way too embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
I had no job security whatsoever. I was not even making enough money to live, and I was working full time.
Sure.
And my dad had told me to get a job since I was 18 years old. I got married at 20. My wife was 18. I got married with no job. And my dad was so mad. Why won't you just go get a job? And I said, because they don't do it the way that I would do it. And if I'm going to have to do it their way, which is the wrong way, I'm not going to do it.
Sure.
If I'm going to do something, I'm going to start my own business. And so all these different things, like, I had never listened to anyone. Like, it just was not something that I did. But yeah, my dad said that he supported me, yet what was he going to do? I wasn't going to ask for money, because I would have already failed if that was the point.
Sure.
It literally felt like I was all out there on my own, and I had no clue, like, who to trust, what to do. Like, I had no clue. And though there was a place I could go back to, that's everyone has that. Yet that's what's called like the ships that you're supposed to burn when you go all in what you do. And I truly believe that it was me burning the ships, the burning the boats, just as Tony Robbins says. That's
sure.
You to take that.
You want
to
take the island, burn the boats, right?
That's exactly right. And so that was a huge piece of what we did. And I just never really looked back. I allowed that fear of going backwards to really propel me forward into really what I wanted to do.
Sure. Sure. Interesting. So I guess I didn't realize that you're pushing 3 years in business now, right? Is my timeline correct?
Well, technically over 7 years. I started my first business when I was actually 12.
Okay.
Yet 7 years of actually owning a business. We always had something on the side.
Sure.
Yet it wasn't producing. But I'm definitely only about 3 years into running profitable businesses. And that's obviously been a lot more fun than running businesses that don't turn a profit.
Sure. So tell me a story. I'm always asking people about their relationship with them, their wife, spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever. So how did your wife react when you said, hey, we're going to go down this road with the business?
My wife was always entrepreneurial as well. We're straight up the definition of a power couple, two people using their skills, talents, and abilities to get to that one common vision that they have. And we're actually doing it inside of a business together currently,
mm-hmm.
and probably will for the rest of our lives. We love working together. We have different skills, talents, and abilities. We love supporting each other. We love being around each other. She's working in my office right now
mm-hmm.
as we talk, which is super awesome. So my wife is just one who likes more security and doesn't like risk as much. And so those things are definitely not as common for her as they are for me. I love risk and I love not really knowing the outcome of things. It's what makes me come alive. So
mm-hmm.
with that, I just have to take the responsibility. I believe this is one area that we see a lot of men fail, is that women feel a lot of pressure to produce the outcome that the man wants because they don't truly feel that the man is taking the responsibility and the weight and the burden for his decisions. And so many times you feel that these women are getting stressed out, having to take a leadership role. Whereas if you read any great relationship book, men come alive when they can take a leadership role and it actually boosts their testosterone naturally is one of the things we tell the men to do. And women can operate fully when they feel safe and they
sure.
don't feel like they're taking on that same burden. So we really operated with that in our relationship and still continue to. I make lots of risky decisions and I let her know this is going to be fine because this is my responsibility to make this happen.
Sure. Do you guys ever get sick of each other?
No.
No, that's completely honest. No, I'm telling you from a guy that's been married. Oh my gosh, how long have I been married? I think I'm pushing 19 years. It's been a while. So
yeah, I've been married 7 years, so I haven't been married anywhere near as long. Yet I do spend about 16 hours a day with my wife. So if we divide the time per day for the amount of marriage, like, you know what that whole thing is?
Yeah, you totally win there. I would go crazy. I would totally go crazy. And I love my wife, but holy cow, would I go crazy. And I think
that's a great example of doing what works, right? Like for both people, like for me and Amanda, we both have quality time as one of our highest love languages.
Sure.
And then my second one is acts of service, and hers is physical touch. Physical touch is my last one. So it's been one that I've had to actually learn how to do, because I'm like, what's the point of touching? It doesn't really accomplish anything. That's like my thought process towards it.
I'm going to pause you there and think you're doing it wrong, but that's okay. That's okay. No worries. Yeah. No worries there.
So what was that?
Oh, no worries there. Keep going.
Yeah, so with Amanda, like, yeah, I get it what you're saying now. With Amanda, her love language is physical touch, and but quality time is a big one that we both share that's in common. It's our highest one.
Sure.
And so we actually feel love and give love through spending time with people and each other. So it really worked out well that way. And also we've put our relationship at such a high priority in our lives that I can't even imagine people sacrificing their relationship to do something. I just don't care about anything enough to actually sacrifice something that I've built to be able to go do it. And so I very much so set it up that way. 7 years in, we've worked together almost every day. The most days we've spent apart is maybe a trip of 4 days or something. And we still would talk every day in between it. We spend every night together at dinner, and we eat breakfast every single morning together. We work every day together. And it's never been a time where we've actually felt sick. The only time we feel sick is when we're in conflict. And it's not that we're sick of each other at all. We just are sick of whatever the thing that we're going up against. And we both come together and try to act like we're on a team and be like, what's the problem? And those never last more than a day. Sure. Never do we go to sleep in conflict, ever. It's one of my pet peeves. I don't allow it to happen. I'll stay up all night. I'll stay up for 2 days. Doesn't matter. We will not go to bed until the conflict is resolved.
Interesting. Well, good for you, man. Kudos. That sounds awesome that you and your wife have such a good relationship. That you spend time together, you get to work in business together. That's super cool. That's admirable. So kudos to that.
I don't want people to think that means that it's easy. It's just I don't get sick of her, right? So every single day, there's not a day that we don't have a conflict. Not one. And I used to always think that having conflict meant that I was a bad husband and that maybe she was a bad wife if that happened.
No.
And it wasn't until I went to a mentor or someone like yourself and was like, hey, you know, I'm having trouble with this. Like, this is what happened. And they were like, oh, we talked about the same thing today. Like, we always fight about that. And I was like, wait, this is okay to not be in agreement on this? Like, it just became more fun, and it wasn't such a big deal to not be perfect. And so we're nowhere near perfect. We share everything about our lives in front of our men, especially our close guys that are in our highest level programs. We really open it up and really get vulnerable all with each other from every aspect of a relationship, from communication all the way to the bedroom.
Sure. Sure. I would argue that there's probably no relationship, at least any deep relationship, that doesn't have conflict of some kind, whether it's really, absolutely, really in a country, I mean, best buddies or husband, wife, whatever. I mean, you almost need conflict. I always tell people, nobody gets excited to go on a flat roller coaster. Like, you want to be on the thing with the ups and downs, so that the peaks and valleys, so that you know exactly how high you can go. So that's just
a really good point with the roller coaster, because you're also fully committed on a roller coaster because you're locked in.
You're there.
That's what I feel like in relationship as well. Is the commitment to a relationship is what allows you to get through conflict and have higher levels of confrontation, knowing that you're not going to actually leave each other.
Yeah. So
that's a huge piece of it.
Yes. The relationship is above the conflict. That is not to say that you can't find some common ground or negotiate or resolve the conflict. That is to say that there's nothing that can happen within that conflict itself that is going to destroy the relationship or even challenge the relationship. It's just an individual thing.
Great point.
Yeah. So, you know, thing. Moving back to your business itself, you started out essentially with nothing from a following, and you grew it to, it sounds like, a pretty large following. So how did you do that?
Yeah, I think we have about 70,000 on all different platforms right now and growing. It's been really awesome. I've been able to speak in front of tens of thousands of people now, which has been amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of my business was built not from a following. I didn't really think about building a following at all until about a year and a half ago, to be honest, when I found out that it's the new business card that people were going to go look you up and see how much your follow, like how many followers you had. And I thought, my goodness, I probably should put some emphasis on reaching people. Yet I didn't take that. I just wanted to work with people that were committed to change, that wanted a real transformation, and they would invest to be able to do that. And the one of the biggest ways that I did it that's so proprietary that I just think that it's not taught anywhere, and I've helped so many people do it, is actually through creating a good free offer. This is what we get told to do. If you're wanting to start a coaching business online, high ticket, selling the things that you know, monetizing your expertise, that the number one thing that you do first is, one, you have to create a program, like something that they can buy, and two, you should probably create a free offer, something you can put out there that they can download, and that's how you're going to generate a lead that's going to turn into an email that should make you $1 a day or $1 per month per email. All these different things that we get taught. I found that that didn't work with no following. If I didn't have a bunch of capital to be able to invest in advertising, mm-hmm. that free offer really didn't do anything for me. I'd put it out there. I'd get 30 people that would take me up on that free offer. I'd have 30 emails. And now I'm supposed to email them and they're going to turn into clients. No, they just never open the thing.
Right.
And so what I ended up doing is I ended up instead figuring out what's the transformation I'm looking to create with my product or service, and what's the quickest time frame that I can get an actual tangible result for these people. So the very first one was health. And I thought, okay, I'm helping men lose body fat, but is the core actual thing that I'm doing. And so you always want to start off with one product that solves one problem for one niche. So I was helping businessmen lose body fat, and I was doing it through coaching. And so when I looked at this, I thought, what's the quickest result I could produce? I thought maybe in 2 weeks, I could help them lose a tangible amount of body fat that would show them that this works. So instead of creating a free offer that says lose 7 pounds of body fat in 15 days, or I called it the 15-day six-pack challenge, instead of doing that, I decided to make it like a beta test. You know, if you were to get pills in the mail or something like that, and they said, you know, take this clinical triple blind study, but you have to commit to taking these pills for 30 days or else you don't get to do this. And it's a higher commitment than a free offer. If I were to just send you something, you wouldn't care if you took it. But if I were to say, can you beta test this for me to give me real results, they would do it. So I ended up launching it like that. I only had about 1500 Facebook friends, and I had about 80 people go through this challenge. And I found out that in the first year and a half, 2 years, they invested about 150 grand. With our company, those 80 wow. people. And I thought, oh my goodness, imagine if I did this more often. So instead of creating a free offer, I thought, what's the beta test that I could create? How can I promote that beta test for about 2 weeks to get people involved with it? Have them all start that beta test together for the short amount of time. Mine was 2 weeks. How can I get them a tangible result? And at the end of that challenge, say, hey, you obviously see this, it works, but you either did one of two things. You either failed and you didn't do that well, and so that you need more help and support, which is our program, or you did amazing, but you're not to the point where you've created a habit yet, and you're probably not to your end goal yet, so you need the program. And both of them needed the program, and so I just gently just helped them get to that next step, which was a paying customer. Some of them were one-on-one, some of them were group coaching, and then from there, those are the people that I then invited to a live event that bought more stuff. Because the people that have bought from you before will buy from you over and over again if you just don't do these two things. You don't stop selling to them. That's number one. So you need to keep selling to the people that bought. And two, you don't offend them. Those are the only two reasons why people won't buy from you again. And so I really mastered the art of serving people to the highest level. Once they got through losing weight, what did they need next? Well, they needed fashion advice. They needed to be able to buy new clothes. They needed supplements that would help them get to the next level. They needed to be able to gain muscle. So I kept serving those clients to a high level, but it all started the very beginning with a simple beta test to get them a tangible result in the least amount of time, and then taking those people to an actual paid program.
Huh, that is clever. So going to your you said 1,500, 1,700 Facebook followers, whatever, your initial to get your 80, did you just throw something out there that said, hey, I'm looking for some beta testers? Or what was the wording that you used to bring people in?
That's a great question. So I actually have one video that I would love to be able to link people to, or maybe you could share it with people somehow via email.
Sure, by all means.
The actual video that I did, you know what I mean? It looks hilarious. This was years ago, my very first one. I didn't know what I was doing. This is when Facebook Live was brand new. And I went Facebook Live and I basically called out the people that I wanted to get into this. So I knew who were the men that want to boost testosterone naturally and want to get a six pack. So I spoke the results to people to get their attention. Ooh, I want that. That's me. And so I got only the key people I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I let them know that this wasn't something that wasn't proven. This was something that has tens of thousands of hours of research from other people and myself to make the program, yet we hadn't created results with this specific one. And we don't want to be those people that just tell you results that are from other programs. We want to make sure that we get results with this specific program. So people knew that it was proven, yet they needed to get results with this program. And I said that it's normally $250, but for this specific beta test, I would like to waive that for the men that would like to pay us through action. So all they needed to do was to comment below, "I'm in" on this video, and then we'll reach out to them. We'd reach out to them with a simple script that I still have today. And that simple script is, says something along the lines of, "Hey, by replying with your email to this, you're also saying that you will create, you'll post in the group every day for 15 days. You'll give us a testimonial video before and after. You'll give us before and after pictures, and you'll give us a written before and after of what your life was like before and after. And that will be your $250 of payment." And they were like, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Also, you have to get on a phone call at the very end of the program to make sure that you keep your results, because we'll be embarrassed promoting your results if you get the, if you gain all the weight back again."
Sure.
And they're like, "Oh, it sounds fair. This is amazing. I'm even going to make sure that I don't lose it." But that call is actually truly getting a testimonial and the upsell.
Sure.
Because so that's the upsell is the only way that they could sustain it.
That's genius. How many people fell off when you told them what all they had to do?
Oh, almost nobody actually fell off when I told them what they had to do.
Really? That's awesome.
But here's what you want to expect is that about 30% minimum will actually start and do the stuff. And about 30% of those 30% will actually be hardcore appliers. And so you want to make sure that you account for the fact that if you want to do a beta test challenge, I highly suggest you make your goal 100 people, unless you're already famous. 100 people. Even if you have no following, use your text messages, emails, reach out to people, and like whatever it takes for 2 weeks to be able to promote this thing, maybe even a week,
mm-hmm.
and hit that 100 people, and you can expect that 30 people will truly start, and about 10 of those people will actually truly make it to the end, and those will be those core people that will probably buy from you, those 10 people. So I only got about 10 people to buy at the beginning, but I found out even through serving those people so well that never talked to me after the program was over, I had one of them buy about 6 months later, $5,000, and then he referred $6,000 to the business since then. And I had another guy that went out there and invested $20,000 2 years later with us.
Nice. Well done.
It took me initially, you know, I had to stay consistent with the business.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I didn't shut the business down when it didn't work for me. I stayed consistent, so they always knew I was there. And I also just served them at a high capacity on that front end.
That's awesome. So I guess downshifting, because I know we're running out of time here, you were initially the health, weight loss for guys, or maybe it wasn't even exclusive to guys, was it, initially?
Initially, it wasn't, because I was just trying to make money.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
I thought, man, I just want to help. But then in 2016, we went exclusive men only.
Okay, and then you evolved to now your health, business, and what is the third one, financial?
Relationships.
Relationships, okay, that's a big one. So how did you decide to broaden the reach that way to the specific niche of men? I suppose professional men, whatever you target in that niche.
Men that own businesses, yep.
Okay, so how did you figure out to go into that space, and what made you decide to go into that space?
It's such a good question. And again, a lot of it had to deal with me. I noticed that as a businessman, I had more struggles than just knowing the latest marketing strategy and knowing the next sales tactic. And that also there was no place for men to really be able to connect. There's so many issues out there in the world that I saw that we grow up in a family that usually has a dad now leave the home to be able to go make money, and we get raised by our moms. And mm-hmm. 25% of homes inside of America actually are fatherless homes, and those are averaged out. So you got to think there's a lot of communities that have great homes with a dad there, which means that in other areas it's up to 75-80% of fatherless homes.
Sure.
And so we learn how to be a man by what our parents or the woman in our life would want us to be like. And then we go to school and we have 8 out of 9 teachers, kindergarten through 8th grade, are women teachers.
Sure.
So then we learn how to be a man based on what women would want a man to be like, but would never marry and never love. Because women typically, if you watch any movie, they fall in love with the bad boy, not the guy that's so nice and the friend of theirs.
Sure.
They'd be friends with them, but they never marry him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became this really big issue that we never really truly knew how to be a man growing up. And we never actually spend time apart from women when we used to do this all the time. When we go work on the farm, we'd go spend time with our dad and the other boys, and we'd learn how to be a man there. And then we'd come home and we'd bring those two different colliding worlds together, and they would really complement each other really well. And so with all those different problems after coaching 600 men one-on-one in their health, I realized that these were core issues that if we didn't go after the opposite of what most people do. Most people have one product and it goes to 18-year-olds to 80-year-olds, both genders, doesn't matter. For me, I wanted to go after one type of person, the man who owned the business that wanted to have great relationships at home, great body and health life, while actually going out there and being able to build a bigger business than anyone else because of it. And that's a very small amount of people in the world.
Right.
I wanted to work with the one type of person on the things that we go through as men and to be able to build a community that we call brotherhood. Brotherhood is something that I've never experienced before in my life. I was always scared of being in a group of men and I was going to have to size myself up. And what if they try to fight me and I'm smaller than them? Or what if they call me out on something I do? I always felt these fears. And so I felt more comfortable around women than I did with men. And I saw that I wasn't the only one. So it wasn't until I had 600 clients and I thought, what's their biggest problem right now? Which is your next step after you do these beta tests. Out of all my clients, what do they really need? And I thought, man, what they need is to actually connect together, to be able to be around like-minded men that want these same things rather than the friends they're hanging out with. How can I do that? A live event. And that's when I created my first live event, got them together, and I created an offer that we now call Brotherhood Elite, which was only for 40 men that wanted to have a high-level connection with other businessmen while also gaining skills, tactics, and abilities to be able to prosper as what we call the three-dimensional businessman, health, wealth, relationships. And since then, we've had these men in, 92% of them stayed for the next year. This is a multi-five-figure investment for them. And it just showed that we really, truly served them in the area that they needed the most help. Rather than staying with our own agenda, we went on to the next phase of how can we serve these men to the best capacity. And that's really what was the deciding factor for us.
Nice. That's pretty cool. How did you figure out content and all that jazz? Was this something that you learned the hard way, like you did with the health thing? Or was this like, how did you figure all this out?
It was even easier. It was so much easier because health, I was annoyed. I lost 60 pounds, but I wasn't the guy who was roided up on Instagram, just taking pictures of myself all the time. I was just the health guy. And I felt so stuck talking about health when health wasn't always the problem. But what I gained was a mission and a vision that was bigger than a product or service. I wanted to redefine the dictionary definition of what it meant to be a businessman. That if you didn't become three-dimensional, you can't even call yourself a businessman. And I took on this journey of wanting to have the most powerful community on planet Earth that then would be able to influence world leaders where we can actually consult every major world leader in the future. That was our goal. And with the overarching theme of this, I was able to talk about so many more things that was going on in my life. I could talk about my wife. I could talk about my workflow. I could talk about my health. I could talk about my struggles. And finally, I could talk about the things I wanted to talk about and then create products and services that then serve that community of men that were interested in those topics. So it became so much easier to create content. This is what we help all of our men do as well, is instead of being so product focused, be people focused. Get those people and then create the products that are going to solve their problems. So you don't feel so stuck talking about one subject. You could talk about everything that's contributing to the core problem you're trying to solve. And it became so much easier because I'm the product. Like I'm the person that was struggling. I was overweight. I had no relationship. I couldn't create income. I couldn't do all three at the same time. I would get two balanced and then I would end up messing it all up by trying to get that third piece. And it wasn't until I truly got brotherhood, had a community of men around me that were willing to support me, that I was able to go out there and be fit, have a great relationship, and actually go out there and create a business that thrives.
Sure. That's awesome. That is super awesome. So I know we're running out of time, so I got one last final question for – probably two, actually. What is your favorite part about owning your own business?
Freedom. Freedom to me is doing what I want when I want with whoever I want.
That is magical. I love that answer. Final question.
Quality control, last one too, by the way. Like quality control, I think, is a big deal. I love being able to put my all into something.
Sure.
And from the top down, know that I truly believe in it.
Sure. What is the challenge that you're trying to overcome right now?
Scaling a team.
Scaling a team. You have employees or is it you and your wife?
Yeah, employees. We have a 1,200 square foot office that I'm in right now.
Okay. Okay. So you want to add more essentially?
Absolutely. Okay. And front end acquisition, I think, would be our major thing to do that. And then also just like putting in the time right now, we have, everyone has so many tasks that we need to be able to offload those tasks and hire so we can actually focus on the systems for hiring and all those types of things. Well, it's, luckily I invest like $100,000 a year into mentors to help me with that. So I practice what I preach for sure.
Sure. Sure. That's super cool. That's a very tough road in regards to that hiring and training and all that jazz. I got my phone answering business. That is the struggle with that business. It's often, well, I would say it's definitely harder getting employees that do well, very well, than it is to get clients, which is odd. I would have never thought that was the case, but it turns out people come with baggage, right?
Good thing is that my mentor Cole Hatter says money cures all, because if you can make enough money, you can actually go out there and hire the right people to make sure that you get the right systems and processes and all those things. And I'm in that transition right now. Is if I focus on the things I'm great at and produce money, I can go out there and make sure that the other things work out well.
Sure.
But if you have no money, you can't, you're just like have no oxygen. It's really tough.
That's fair. I guess I don't know what it's like in San Diego right now in Madison, Wisconsin. The unemployment rate is so low that the people just finding the bodies alone is a tough sell. But
no way. That's awesome. That's a great testament to the United States. Congrats, USA.
That's right. Go America. Cool. Well, this has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Nicholas Bailey of the Billion Dollar Body. Nicholas, quick, what is the website that we can send people to?
BillionDollarBody.com.
It doesn't get any easier than that. That is awesome. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at SunPrairieMediaCenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at DrawInCustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.